Hello, everybody, and welcome. Today we have Sarah Bela Telishevsky all the way from Melbourne, Australia, who I'm sure you already know from her two-part episode on her philosophy on education and her incredible, powerful story. So today we're going to sit back and relax, grab your popcorn and your drink. Sarah Bela is going to give us some story time, some of the stories of some of the incredible work she's done. So Sarah Bela, take it away.
Okay, so seeing I ended up last time with my first experiences, I think I'll go along that trajectory and continue from you know, with my first experiences before I actually had my training. So the next story that came along was my own daughter. It was probably about 18, and she was given temporary employment with a friend to take over an unofficial preschool when the mother director was took time off. She had taken some maternity leave. So you had these two 18-year-old girls with no teaching experience running a crèche full of about 12 kids, let's say, or 14 kids or something. Mixed ages, boys and girls. And, you know, including a couple of older ones, like where she was homeschooling her older kids. So, you know, it was a bit of a challenge, to put it mildly. And she was running into all kinds of challenges and difficulties. So I actually, now this is the first time I actually wrote down a program, because with the others, we just sort of discussed the program, the other two stories. And I said, do this, do this, do this, do this. And when that started to work, I'd say, okay, add this, add that. Because there was no nurtured heart approach program at that stage. In fact, later on, I made my own program, and this was the blueprint, so to speak, or the first draft. I wrote down a program for her and her friends, how to make sure that the kids are getting their energy needs met through doing the right thing instead of the wrong thing. And it got them through the few weeks until this woman was back from maternity leave, and then either they were not involved with the school, or they were just teaching, or they were part-timers, I can't remember. But it got them through those few weeks, or whatever it was, a month or two, and they really appreciated it. Let's put it that way. The other story is quite funny. My kids, several of my kids did a stint in Ukraine working with orphans and very disadvantaged kids. Why Ukraine is a whole different story, but that's what they were doing. And several of my kids did that. And they would go for a summer or for a period of time and work with these orphans and give them a good time and take them on trips. They weren't the organizers, but they were the ones who controlled what happened and what they did. So one of my kids calls me, and I didn't hear from him very often because, you know, it wasn't like you could call from the Ukraine. We didn't have cell phones back then. So to hear from my son was like, oh, what are you calling for? He says, Mom, I need some tips. I've got all these kids. My bunk is aged 14 to 20, and I've got to get them some kind of discipline and order. How do I get them to line up? He says. So I said, oh, you want to get them to line up? When you call the kids to line up and one kid comes, you make the biggest fuss over that kid. What? Can't you line up? And it worked like magic. He calls me again, I don't know how he got a message to me. Maybe he called me, I can't remember. Ma, or maybe I had to wait till after camp. That's probably more likely. Those couple of hints you gave me just changed our whole camp experience. Everything went smoothly from there. So it was a small story, but it was a big one. Another story. I'm going to go into when I did training in California. I trained two schools in California. One was a very large, well-known school, and they were known to have and to do well with a certain percentage of difficult kids. They sort of got a reputation for it. But yet, you know, underneath it all and behind the scenes, they were really struggling with these kids because they were oppositional and, you know, the kids we all know very well about. And they were struggling. So I was here in Australia and they were in California somewhere. And they asked me to give them tips and hints. I started doing, first of all, just a one-off. In those days, we used to use not Zoom. It was before Zoom. Some kind of a webinar. I can't remember what it was. I did an hour session with some of the staff or all of the staff, and they wanted more. It developed into a full training once a week over Skype. And this went on for a few months. And then they actually brought me out to California to do a full training with their school. So I have tons and tons of stories of transformations that happened in that particular school. But while I was there, There was the other school, which was a preschool, a very large preschool with I think 10 or 12 different classrooms. So I was doing simultaneously, half my time was at this school and half my time was at that school. In the large school, we had a full staff of people who were very comfortable with what they were doing, even though it wasn't working very well. And this is a general problem in schools. The teachers have a hard time doing things differently when they've been doing it a particular, you know, using the cucumber to knock down the wall again. Or whatever, a baseball bat, depends on which story you hear. and they're doing the same thing over and over again, and it's not really working, but, you know, it's very hard for them to accept that there is a better way, especially when it seems counterintuitive. So we had a lot of resistance. But nevertheless, you know, I went into the classrooms and I was doing modelling and I was doing observing and I was doing coaching and I was doing my training as well. And there was one particular classroom where I used to go into all the classrooms, just observe for a bit. So the teachers were put on a show when I came. Some of them were really, really into it, but others were just playing the game. I come into this guy's classroom. He's got a sixth grade class. So I walk into the class and he immediately changes tone. He says, "Oh, don't bother coming in. They're doing a test now." I said, "It's okay. I don't mind if you're doing a test. I just want to come in and watch for a few minutes." So I'm standing there watching and the kid's all writing. And he feels bad that he's not saying anything. So he goes up to one kid and he says, "I see that you skipped question 4. You're going to come back to it and you're doing question 5 now." Then he says something to another kid. And you should have seen the electricity in that room. Suddenly they're all working hard and they're thinking and they, you know, it would just change. Just those 2 or 3 comments he made for my benefit. It was clear it was for my benefit. But he told me afterwards he was astounded at the difference in the classroom. Where instead of walking around and saying, "Shh, shh," you know, like, you know, he was just, you know, they were all energized and it was such a beautiful, so it was an incredible story. There was another classroom in the same school where they had a very, very difficult 6-year-old, I think, 5 or 6-year-old girl. And I came in, they asked me to actually run a class for them because they're having a lot of trouble. And this teacher was very into it, but she was having a lot of trouble implementing it. She had a few difficult kids, but one kid in particular was very difficult. So she asked, "Can you just run the class for 20 minutes? I said, "Sure, with pleasure." So I come into the class and I go up to the front. I introduce myself. I draw a picture of the desks and I ask them to give me their names. And as I'm doing that, I'm saying, "Oh, I noticed that you've got this book on your table and this." And this particular girl had a big blue bow in her hair. You know, they all had very strict uniforms, but they were allowed to wear different bows and different school shoes. I think they were allowed with sneakers or whatever. So I picked on her bow because there wasn't much else to pick on. And I said, "Oh, you've got a really big bow and you've put your hair up so neatly into the bow." And she beamed. And then a couple of other times I just gave these random comments to her and the teachers were impressed because she didn't give me any trouble, even though she didn't know me from Adam. So that was one. Again, it's a small story, but it speaks a lot. And maybe one more story from that. Actually, two more stories from that school, and then I'll tell you some stories from the preschool. So one story was a grade one teacher. He only had 6 kids in his class, but they were very difficult kids. And it was a similar story to the grade 6 class, but this was 5-year-olds. So he had 6 5-year-olds, very difficult 5-year-olds. And again, when I walked into the classroom, he started finding things that they were doing right. And lo and behold, those kids were amazing for the period of time that I was in there. And I spent more time than I intended. And I ended up spending about a half hour in there, which originally was only about 10 minutes. And he was pressed because he knew I was there, but he was encouraged because the kids were actually doing what they were supposed to. So that was nice. And the last story I'll give you from that school was that a teacher was away. So the school admin was a bit cheeky and they asked me if I'd substitute for the class. So I said, "I will on one condition, that one of the staff members actually films the class from the back. Because if I'm going to substitute, I want you to be able to use it." So I said, "Okay, fair enough." So one of the teachers came, one of the admin came in and she was filming. So I don't know if they still have that, but they had a record of it. I come into the classroom and I do my routine, my shtick, as they call it. You know, my name's Sarabella, and I never said Mrs. Tilashevsky. It was like too formal. I'd say, "My name's Sarabella and I'm here for the day. And, you know, I see that you're all calm and you're all relaxed." And, you know, they're also grade sixes, I think, but a different grade 6 class. And I see that, you know, I just started talking to them and asking the questions and started complimenting any kid that was, which none of them were really being rude. So I had lots to compliment them on, how they were near their desks, how they were polite, how they were speaking, what's it called, respectfully, all kinds of things. I ended up, it was supposed to be for 20 minutes or half an hour or so. They just kept filming me for a full hour. I don't know how I got by. I had no idea. They gave me a curriculum. They told me I've got to do, you know, the story of the fox and the grapes. So the fox and the grapes takes about 10 minutes, and I had to keep with the fox and the grapes for an hour. But somehow or another, with Nurtured Heart approach, I managed, and everything was just fine. And they had it on record. So moving to the other preschool, they had at least 10 or 12 classes, and the classes were divided into age, as they usually are. And they had two-year-old classes, three or four of them, three-year-old, four-year-old, five-year-old classes. So, and very often the fours and fives were together and the twos and threes were together when it was playtime. So the very small ones were separated from the very large ones. And I was doing training with the school, and they asked me particularly to focus on two major problems they had. One was in the two-year-old classrooms, all of them. There was a huge biting problem. The kids were biting. So not all the kids, but a lot of the kids were just, you know, they thought it was cool to bite. If you've ever been bitten by a two-year-old, you know it's not fun. And when a parent sees that a kid's been bitten, the parents are not impressed. So there was that problem. And then in the five-year-old class, which I did touch upon last time, there was a lot of bullying going on, a lot of bullying. So let's talk about the two-year-olds. So in my training sessions, I said the first thing you've got to do is stop talking about biting at the mountain, you know, at circle time. The more you talk about biting at circle time, the more energy and excitement they're getting out of biting. And they really could not get it because it was so counterintuitive. We've got a problem, we have to teach them. But biting is for food and people are for talking to. But the more they tried to drum it in, the more kids were saying, hey, this is cool. You know? And they didn't mind. Funnily enough, the kids didn't mind being, I mean, they'd scream and yell and carry on, but that was part of the act. They knew that they're going to get bitten if they take a toy away from somebody else, especially if they take a toy away from a biter, which is a whole interesting thing, which we might get to talk about. If not, I'll leave it to your imagination. How there's a dance going on between between bully and victim, and there always is, or very almost always is. So there was a dance going on, but I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on training the staff to recognize when biting wasn't happening and to leave biting out of their circle time sessions. And I said, whenever a child starts eating, you say, you're using your teeth to eat. Stupid. Very effective. When a child talks to another child, you're using your words. So there was one, okay, so it was working reasonably well, but there was one child, of course, there's always one child who was very, very difficult to crack. Say, please, and this was after a few weeks. Most of the biting was under control within the first week, literally. But this was already a couple of weeks later. I was still doing the training, and this kid was very difficult to crack. And he was only 2.5. And he looked like a little angel. He really did, as they always do, right? So I walk into the classroom and I sit down on the mat near this child. And he's playing and I'm talking to him and I'm talking to the kids around him as well. Those were the days that magnetiles were really cool. They were like a new toy and everyone was into the magnetiles. So he's playing with the magnetiles and I'm telling him, oh, you put the blue one and the red one together and look, you've made a triangle. And I'm doing that with the other kids as well because I'm not focused just on him. But I am close to him so I can catch him when he bites or when he's about to bite. So after a while, a child grabs something from him. Now, again, I know that that child knew what they were doing. But that's another story. And I'll come back to that later. But at any rate, he is about to bite for sure. There's no question about it. Before he even can register that he got the toy grabbed, I said, wow, you took the toy and you didn't get him. This kid is shocked because I really, really trapped him in success. And his eyes tear up and he said, but he took my toy. He really teared up. So I said to him, You're using your words. You're using your words. And then I started talking about other things, and we found a solution. The other kid who took the toy was gone. History. I didn't go find him. There was no need. But that was a very powerful lesson for everybody in the room, including this little kid, because he was actually honored for not biting when it was totally not his fault. He would have bitten if I wouldn't have interrupted. But I was really trapping and tricking him into success, which is one of the tools that Howard talks about. And it is such a powerful tool. So this is my favorite. I told you that there was a huge bullying problem in the five-year-olds, among the 4 and 5-year-olds. It was mostly older boys with younger or smaller girls. That was just the dynamic there. So one day I happened to walk out into the playground, and I really mean I happened to walk out. I was going through, you had to go through the playground or around the playground to get from one class to another. And I see a circle of boys. And something told me there's something going on here. So I just had this thing, there's something going on here. So I walk straight towards the circle of boys, and they disperse. And in the middle is one little girl. I say to that little girl, "Wow, look how brave you are. You have a whole bunch of boys all around you, and you're looking to see what you should do to respond. You weren't crying, you weren't screaming, you were focusing on the whole thing to see what should I do now." As I'm talking, another little girl comes up, and I guess, probably correctly, that she has come to her friend's defense. Don't know, but I assume, because otherwise, why would she be coming in this direction? And I say to that girl, "Look at you. Look at what a good friend you are. You saw your friend in trouble and you came to help her. You girls are so brave and so clever. You know exactly what to do." Meanwhile, it was very interesting because there were plenty of teachers in the playground and they'd all missed it. The reason they'd missed it and I had seen it was because they were all busy with their centers. One was reading a story. One was doing the sandpit, one was doing blocks, one was doing this. They were all very busy interacting with the kids, which is great, but they were stuck in their centers. So, of course, you know, they came up and I said, "Look, we've got to talk about this. This should not be happening, and then this is what we're going to do about it." And basically I said, "Centers or not," they said, "but that's what we're supposed to do." I said, "Don't sit in your center, stand near your center. Interact with your kids and the kids around you and keep scanning the playground. But you've got to do more than that." And this was during our next session. It wasn't while I was standing outside with them. I said, "Your job now is to make sure that every single one of those boys," and I don't know who they are and you don't know who they are, except that they're boys. We knew that much. We know that they need to see themselves differently. We have to stop allowing them to see themselves as bullies. And that's where my previous story about fingers on and riding the bike. You've got to stop those kids and say, "Look at you. You were riding your bike and you moved out of the way when you saw there was someone in the way. You were climbing on the climbing frame and you were so careful not to step on his or her fingers." And the same with the girls. Show them how they're strong. Show them how they're brave. Show them how they stand up for themselves. And that is what changed the whole dynamic in that whole preschool, was focusing on what was going right. We forget about resetting them. Forget about turning away from, you can't turn away when there's a bunch of boys and one little girl. It's not practical. But to focus on what's going right is the only answer that talks to their hearts. And that's what the nurtured heart approach is, nurturing their hearts. So those are my stories for today. Maybe one day there'll be more room for time for more.
Goodness, what a treat. What a gift. Thank you so much, Sarah Bela, for coming on here and giving us three, everybody. If you don't know, there are 3 episodes of Sarah Bela. Go back to listen to her story and her wisdom. And then these stories, so inspiring and so many tips to take away, so much practical application for us to learn and implement ourselves from these stories. And just, you know, the whole... just everything. Thank you so much. You are a light. You are a Ferrari. You are a Ferrari, that has continued driving and that has
I'm
not
a Ferrari
stopped.
I'm proud of it.
Yes,
and you are so a Ferrari. Should every single heart child. They should be proud of who they are.
I love that. I love that. And
it's a long, hard journey to learn to love yourself, especially when you're always in trouble. But we adults have the key to that.
Yes. And that is our work. So if you could lift up your book again, Sarah Bela wrote a book called Born to Serve. I will put the link down in the comments. Born to Serve with that cute little baby.
Thanks for your son, right
there. Yeah, there it is. And if you would like to reach out to Sarah Bela, get in touch with me, energizinghearts@gmail.com, and I will forward your information to this incredible woman who is lighting up so many hearts and energizing and nurturing so many hearts. What a gift. Thank you all for listening, Sarah Bela. Thank you so much for your time all the way from Melbourne, Australia, and I will see you next time.